I
So
think it's
somebody other than just one of the nurses from C6, this really is really in the lap of the CEO or the director of medical services to respond to these concerns which have been raised.
Good morning. This is Clyde Cave, the Director of Medical Services. Yes, and I'm happy to discuss this because, like in the rest of the country, there is a lot of emotion and free-floating anxiety. The same things that you will see in the population, you are seeing among all of our staff, medical, nursing, orderlies. The first premise is that the hospital is not stocked with the PPE. And that is simply not true. We have the amounts. Now, is it always in the right place at the right moment when somebody might want it if they're unfamiliar with that area? Well, obviously, these are organizational things. You go to a different area, you call a different number, but PPE is always there. I really just wanted, though, to speak to some of these misconceptions that have been made that once you think you may have been in contact, you must be tested, and then you automatically stay at home for 2 weeks. That is a fundamental medical misconception. When you have had contact with someone, that does not mean you have been exposed. If you or I have been in a room not wearing any kind of personal protection, eating and drinking and laughing, it's air conditioned. And somebody in that room turns out to be positive. Yes, that contact is high risk exposure. If me as a physician or one of my colleagues as a nurse is wearing our appropriate PPE and we have contact with a patient, that is not the same risk. So when we talk about risk stratification, that's what we mean. You have to look at the case and determine the likelihood and then proceed to the testing. Now, not all testing is immediately going to show you a result. If you have just been exposed to somebody and you walk straight over to the lab 10 minutes later, there is no test available that is going to tell you anything, nor are you able to transmit the virus. So these are some of the things that we're trying to balance with the public perception that, oh, I must have been exposed. I want to have a test that will tell me something that the test can't medically deliver. And yes, I must stay home, even though there is very little chance that you are infectious. And, you know, in the early stages, before you're infectious, while you still have to wear your PPE, you are not at risk for passing that on in your professional duties. The practical sequelae of this, obviously, is if everybody did this, I'm hearing people calling for a national pause for all the healthcare workers, same as the country. If we all stayed home, the amount of death and disability to patients who are not COVID positive, we have a hospital full of sick people who depend on us. And this is part of what we have taken as our professional oaths to look after ill people. We do everything, and there is everything available to keep us safe. But we
Dr.
can
Cave,
let emotion overrun us all.
Dr. Cave, we are not dealing with the average person outside. We are dealing with nurses in the Queen Elizabeth Hospital who should have been fully aware of all that you just said. It comes across as though, notwithstanding what has been said to them, some are feeling vulnerable. What do you say to those people? They seem, from what I've heard from Mr. Franklin, these are people who, notwithstanding the PPE and all the safety measures, some of them seem to have been left in a position where they feel that once tested, they should not be sent back to work. Is this happening? And if it is happening, why is it happening?
Well, I can speak to you a little bit about what we go through as health professionals, where we try to balance what we think, what our minds are informed scientifically, and what as individuals we feel emotionally. And you're discussing feelings and emotions, which are, while part of the balance, not the scientific part. Nurses have a long history of supporting each other. And I think a nurse would be best placed to tell you the kinds of things that they do to mentor junior nurses, to support those who feel particularly vulnerable because perhaps of a pre-existing comorbidity or family conditions. And perhaps a nurse can take this.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis. I am Charmaine Worrell. I'm the Assistant Director of Nursing.
Yes,
and I walk curators corridors at least 2-3 times a week interacting with the nurses. Some of them are scared, but this is normal. We have interactions as to how patients come in, how patients are doing. And people seem to think that the fear is all tied to COVID. Sometimes it is when the nurses look in the bed, that person reminds me of my mom, my dad, myself, my own vulnerabilities. And that is where fear comes in. And we have discussions on that. I like to use myself. I am diabetic. I am hypertensive. I am asthmatic. I have been a nurse for over 20 years. I still walk QEHS corridors from the top to the bottom because I am confident that the PPE that I wear is protecting me to the best of the ability for any country. So I put on my PPE, I walk around, I have interactions with the nurses on all the wards. They see me, we have discussions. I have not encountered what Mr. Franklin is speaking about.
He specifically he specifically said C5 or B5.
I have literally just left C5 and I could not find anything or did I hear anything to bear out what he said. I don't know if it is one particular disgruntled person, but it was, I found nothing like that. I even asked them if there was anything needed, anything we wanted, they wanted to discuss, and there was nothing new. So I am quite amazed.
So you can categorically say that nurses who were sent for tests from C5 or B5 are in no position to say that they were sent back to work while awaiting tests.
I can say to you that the categories that Dr. Cave just mentioned that would need to be isolated would be sent home. If they were in a category that they, when they were assessed, the risk was low, they came back to work. So it is not a one size fits all.
Which means you can't rule out the possibility that some of what Caswell Franklin charged actually took place, because it's not a one size fits all. But to those people who may be worried, if they actually fall into that category, what's the best that you can tell them? Because ultimately what we're working towards is trying to allay their fears. We concede that as human beings, they will have their fears and their reactions. Once they're feeling like that and they feel exposed and vulnerable, then what can you do to assist those people against the backdrop of the constraints that you have?
So good morning, Mr. Ellis. I am the bed manager, Monica Edwards. And I'm also a nurse, a senior nurse in the hospital. And what we've been doing from last year, we've been speaking to the nurses about all of the support that we have for them. So there's the help desk. They inform us about their symptoms, if they're feeling ill, et cetera. They also have the staff clinic, the staff health and wellness clinic that they can go to where they're assessed, and they communicate with us on a daily basis as to how they are feeling. And when they, we also have the EAP, so that if they're feeling ill, etc., they're placed in categories. They understand what it is, so they understand if they're high risk, they're moderate risk, or if they're low risk, and what it means in terms of coming to work. Nurses have no problem with coming to work. They've even been volunteering to work at the isolation centers. Yes, they have concern about their families, et cetera, but they understand the importance of wearing their PPEs. They order the PPEs. We ensure that they get them on a weekly basis. And if they need in between to top up, we ensure that they also have a recourse. Again, we said the help desk, nursing office, and they also have, there's a doctor at the health and wellness clinic. You've been doing testing for them should they need testing. At the end of the day, there's a section for them to go over and be tested, and they understand all of these resources.
I got a nurse wrote me here just now, and the person said, ask the chairman why the nurses have to be begging for PPE gear on a daily basis. The person goes on to say, I work with persons coming in from the community every day. And we have been begging for PPE gear without any success. And now about five of our patients have tested positive, and we all dealt with these patients without PPE gear, which we tried to access without success. This is somebody writing us and saying that. So what is the truth of what is going on here?
I think I am not aware of any any cluster of patients in the hospital. But what I'm trying to say is I feel that the hospital and the nurses at the hospital are caught in the middle of some sort of political and trade union malaise. I'm being very, very honest and direct with you.
I am very offended. I'm very offended right now. I did not go there and seek one.
Mr. Caswell. Yes, it is my opportunity to speak. And I'm speaking in sterling.
And you're being offensive. You're not talking about me.
The nurses
you're not talking about me.
Could we please understand that the PPE is available at the hospital? Any nurse that has written you, Dr. David Ellis, sorry, Mr. Ellis, mm-hmm. please let them reach out to me, so I can understand if there is a particular problem. Part of the reason why we set up the emergency depot in the nursing office is so that we are in a position to see if someone comes and there's a gap because they haven't gotten PPE at the ward level, the nursing office is able to see if there's some gap or some inefficiency that is taking place at the ward level. So we're putting systems in place to buy PPE. We're putting distribution systems in place. And then we're putting up backup systems that can monitor and evaluate the performance of staff in distributing PPE. I'm very passionate on this note because for me, the nurses at the hospital are the lifeblood of this hospital. And they are really passionate about what they do. And it is really important for me to get across the message to the Barbados public that the nurses here at QEH are committed to giving care. They're showing up for work. They're showing up for work and they're delivering. And mm-hmm. any challenges, no institution, once you're dealing with human beings, you have there may be a situation where somebody fails to perform a role that maybe at an individual or departmental level. That is what we have to guard against as management. But we're here this morning, I'm surrounded by nurses really making representation on their behalf that they're here, they're on the job, and they're committed to serving Barbados and Barbadians and their patients.
That is not in doubt at all. And if we press this issue, on behalf of the whole institution.
Yeah.
Those who are giving good service already and feel comfortable, and also those who feel uncomfortable, because you know being on the front line means a lot to the rest of us here in Barbados. So this other person says the issues with PPE is that when you go to procurement, you're treated as though the PPE you want to wear it for your personal use. And we often have to remind them that it is needed to nurse the patients. This writer goes on to say the QEH is plagued with a lot of issues, but they tell the public what they want to make their faces look good. So you seem to have a core of people who are quite comfortable, and let's be realistic. When you're managing any entity, you will have those who are comfortable and those who are uncomfortable. The question is, how are you going to go about trying to grapple with those people who feel as though they can't really talk to the administration about their problems and that they would prefer to go and call Caswell Franklin, or they don't even call the media, but they go to the trade union to represent their interests. How then are you going to reconcile these two factions of your staff? And this is only the nursing.
Let me
hear Caswell first.
David, before she responds, I find it offensive when she speaks about political and trade union malaise. I did not go out and seek one nurse to join my union. They sought me out. I was home hiding from COVID.
Yeah, but Caswell, in all fairness, the malaise that she talks about, or the fight that she is alluding to, could arise notwithstanding the fact that you were, according to Burton Hines, minding your business. It could still be that the nurses themselves would be the ones who are generating that kind of environment.
The nurses complain. They say that patients are sent to the wards awaiting PCR tests, right? Then the nurses have to interact with them. Nurses are waiting almost 2 weeks to get back tests, and they're supposed to be priority. You know, nurses are just like anybody else in the public. If you went for a test, David, you can wait just like the nurse can wait just like you. And they have to go home to their families. It isn't only QH, you know, because QH is the only hospital. It's even worse at geriatric. You know, Gordon Cumming, you took one patient from the QH and sent them to Gordon Cumming to be kept in a day room. And for nurses to monitor this patient that you suspect might be COVID thing. The whole system has broken down. And QH is right up there, steering it to the ground. And no come here trying to give people and insulting me. I didn't attack QH. I called to say, look, I have too many nurses complaining. And the things that the nurses are complaining about should be easily remedied. But they're not being remedied. I don't know what is the problem. If what they're telling the managers at the hospital might be receiving different information from the people that they have that report to them. But the nurses are not telling me the same thing that you are hearing now, right? They have been my phone since I was on the program. I have over 100 WhatsApp messages spraying up to me. I can't read them all.
But let me ask you, if this is the kind of pressure that is mounting, then we're trying to find a way forward. Given what we're hearing from the hospital leadership and what you're hearing from the nurses, what do you recommend to the hospital as the way forward in trying to reduce the tension in the interest of the country as a whole?
Stop talking down and listen to the nurses. We heard the one nurse talking about she walks the ward and she goes everywhere and asks her, but the last time she saw a patient, that she dealt with a patient. So you can say that, you can come to the ward and talk and push your head inside and talk to the nurses and stuff. You don't deal with one patient. You got your PPE on, you got your face mask on, you got your shield on, but these people are actually dealing with the patient. You are not one of those. The people who are actually dealing with the patients are the people who here know my phone is still going ding, 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 ding all the time.
They can hear it all the time. They can hear it in the background.
Yeah, that's what I'm telling you. My phone is going ding, 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 ding all the time. I ain't making up anything, and I'm not looking for trouble. All I'm trying to do is to make sure that these nurses end up alive at the end of this thing.
Well, let's... Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am, please. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, thank you very much. Again, I'm surrounded by a group of nurses here in the room, and it's unfortunate that all of them cannot speak. But it is important, David, you're correct, to recognize that you're going to have some nurses across the hospital who are comfortable and some who are not and clearly are reaching out. What we've tried to do as an institution is a few things. One, we've made resources available for counseling and support. Two, we have been auditing PPE compliance and PPE availability. That is important. Three, every Thursday, I myself as executive chair, I actually have a policy where I have an open door policy where I see people across the length and breadth of the hospital and I take one-on-one any concerns so that as a senior level manager, you're not insulated and isolated from what is happening on the ground. And people do take the opportunity to come into those sessions and speak to me directly about what is happening. Three, the incident that was talking about between the divide between the procurement department and the nursing department is something that we grapple with on a daily basis. You have one department that is bringing in supplies
ensuring its safe distribution across the hospital, who's responsible for stewardship and not irrational use. And then you have users of the PPE. So there have been, we will not be disingenuous, cases where there's a divide between the procurement section and the nursing. But this is the challenge, David and Caswell, of all hospitals. And it is our job to strike that balance, to ensure that there's rational use of PPE and not overuse, and ensure that people get the PPE that they need. So I want to give Caswell the assurance that we are open and available and willing to respond to queries from the nursing community. And our nurse managers, they may not be doing day-to-day nursing. That's why I have a mix around me, but they're also important because they do the auditing. They bring the reports. They look to remove any bottlenecks that exist from department to department when they learn that there may be some shortfall in the delivery of PPE. So they're as important as the nurses who deliver care on the ward. And we're all one team.
Agreed. And that's what this is all about. Let's talk a little bit, Mrs. Bynoe Sutherland.
That is fine.
About the impact of COVID, of our community spread on the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. My memory goes back to last year when there was a lot of discussion about trying to protect the Queen Elizabeth Hospital from COVID. Yeah. So much so that we had the facility built at Harrison, as far as Harrison's in St. Lucie. We also had the dispute over the surgery that was made especially for COVID patients, because as I understood it, COVID patients needed to be treated, have surgery in a completely different environment. And all of that was aimed at protecting the hospital from COVID. What is the situation with COVID in the hospital today? That requires that we hear not only about your staff, but we need to get a sense of what has been happening with patients coming into the hospital with COVID since we have community spread, since you have also been announcing that people have been turning up at accident and emergency and dying there and turning out to be positive, COVID positive. I think the country perhaps needs a fuller explanation as to what's going on now.
Thank you so much, David, because I think this is an important discourse. And forgive me if I sound a little muffled because we're all in a room, we have on a mask and appropriate PPE. So you're correct. When we first set out on this journey of dealing with COVID, the mandate that was given to the hospital was to remain COVID-free as far as possible. And the government took an important and unprecedented strategic decision that other countries have subsequently followed to set up facilities outside of the hospital so that for as far and as long as possible, we could treat patients safely out of the confines of the hospital so that staff and patients can have continuity of service. From the end of December, early January, once you have the situation of the declaration of community spread, Queen Elizabeth Hospital now becomes like all of the hospitals across the globe, which will now be encountering situations where a person gets admitted for a stroke or any situation. They've come from the community. And then based on the symptomology that the physicians and nurses are picking up on the ward, there's a suspicion that in addition to what they may have, that they may have COVID disease. So testing is done, therefore, of patients on the ward. And as would be expected, with community spread means that we now have it across the length and breadth of the community. In addition to patients presenting at the accident and emergency room, we also have patients who have been diagnosed after they've been admitted. Now, this is part and parcel of what happens when you have community spread in a country. But for the institution, you're now moving from a situation where you were not dealing with it to now from the January 1st. And remember, we're only talking about 4 or 5 weeks, adjusting to a new normal of having people who are presenting for important illnesses, surgeries, colonoscopies, whatever is required, and discovering after admission or after a visit that they're COVID positive. So we have been preparing for this eventuality. When you heard me refer to our contingency plans, that we recognize that this could happen, so we therefore put the necessary plans in place. What we've done as an institution, and Dr. K, I'll just jump in if I articulate it incorrectly, we have since January 1st, we've diagnosed about, I think, 46 of the numbers of patients that have contributed to the national number. About 46 of those have actually come from the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. The vast majority are diagnosed through the accident and emergency room, but we've also had cases that have been diagnosed in about 7 to 8 different wards, as you would expect with community spread across the country, across the hospital. And this is part and parcel of what we're grappling with. We're taking a couple of key steps. When a person is found to be COVID positive on the ward, we know that there is a plan. We isolate the patient. We know we need to continue their care for their stroke, for their brain injury, whatever is happening. We continue their care, but we isolate them. And then we have a very specific and well-articulated plan from each department, where they are then moved from the Queen Elizabeth Hospital through a pre-designated route to the isolation facility, and sanitization is done of that place, or that place where the patient was located. And then in the move at Harrison's Point, Blackman Gollop, and these facilities, we have the appropriate clinical staff who can continue care for COVID as well as the substantive illness that the person has presented, because we cannot forget that there are other illnesses out there besides COVID that need to be adjusted. So that is what's happening with patients.
A couple of questions I have for you. The isolation facility, where exactly is that?
The isolation facility is at Harrison's Point. We have a small...
No, I mean, do you have you said on the compound.
Sorry, we have Enmore.
Is this the same place? Is this the same place that was supposed to be the surgery?
In addition, it has about 5 to 6 rooms. One of the rooms has been converted for surgery. But where I'm talking about isolation, meaning that on the ward, they're screened and isolated and separated, and then they're moved from the ward through a pre-designated route to Harrison's Point. Have I missed
anything? I want to find out. When we come back, you can research this, but you may have the information ready to hand. I want to find out how the delay in testing has impacted on your capacity to identify positive or negative prior to treatment. Because if that is a determinant in whether you treat them or not, then how quickly you get those results is crucial. So let's come back and talk about